The golden era of podcasting.
We are in the golden era of podcasting.
We are.
That's not wrong.
People will look back on this and go, yes, this was the golden era.
That's right. They were mining gold.
Like they look back on the golden era of CB radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
And we'd like to welcome a special guest with us today. She is a comic book artist, the co-creator of Why, The Last Man, and also Ian's wife, Pia Guerra, has joined us. Hi, Pia.
Hello.
Hi, Pia. Now, we've never met before.
No, we have not.
This has been an arranged marriage. It was arranged by Dave when this podcast began. And he said, once we reach episode 15, we would be wed on the podcast.
Yay!
I will be officiating.
Good stuff. What does that mean?
It just means I'm very officious.
Okay. And is that, like, efficient?
No.
Does it mean anything like you're an aficionado?
No.
Okay. So are you fishing for compliments?
That, and I'm also a busybody. And a nitpicker.
Yeah.
And a fuss budget. That's all. I didn't bring my thesaurus this
week. I do have
to
say this, Pia, that Dave does mind his own beeswax. In fact, about a week ago, we took out a small beeswax loan.
That's true.
Yep.
I went to the bank. And I said, I brought my prospectus and I carefully presented my business model to them for my beeswax factory. And then partway through, they pointed out that actually it was bees that made beeswax. And then I quietly folded my prospectus and then I left.
And the sad thing was that was also your plan B. Anyway, Pia's here. Hey, Pia, how are you? So you draw comics. What's that like? Anyway, Dave, so what I'm thinking, go ahead.
What
it's
a
weird
bully.
It's weird that a wasp is like trying to apply for that kind of bee loan, huh? Isn't that funny?
Yes.
All right, anyway. So you do comic books and whatnot?
Yes.
All right, that's good. What's the biggest misconception people have about what you do?
That it's glamorous.
Well, you are in a full evening gown.
Yes.
That's true. And you're wearing a tiara.
Yes.
So what
that
about...
That takes away from the monotony a bit.
Do the high shoes help while you're working?
Yes, because I'm very short and my feet tend to dangle, so the high heels help me with a little more stability.
Are you able to work the controls in the sewing machine with them on, though?
Yes.
What? Do you think people sew comic books?
Yes.
Oh, that's where you're wrong. She draws them with a pencil.
Oh.
Or a computer.
Okay, I just thought it was really complicated embroidery, but I'm obviously wrong.
I see where that can come from.
You know, you're not wrong about, like, people dressing up to draw, though, because we have, like, seen that online, like, picture. Of course, Seth. You get, like, someone like Seth.
Yes, he wears a boiler suit when he's drawing.
Boiler suit. Mm-hmm. But you look at, like, the old-timey pictures of comic book artists. You know, they would dress up. You have a little shirt and tie and the suit, and you come and you work in the, you know, you draw your spirits or your whatnot, or your, you know, whatever racist characters you've got.
let's talk about that for a second, because personally, I think that looks better.
But to who? Who cares? You're drawing.
No, but I just think when you look at pictures of them, like, don't you think they look really cool? Like, wearing their suit and tie and everything?
Yeah, there's a really awesome picture floating around right now of Jack Kirby in his really hot days in a suit. And, man, he should have been in pictures. He was really styling.
Yeah. He was a good looking guy of that type. And if you want to see what that type is, basically almost every other character he ever drew looks like him.
Yeah, I just like the idea that they got dressed up to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now you see pictures of comic book artists and they're wearing like their t-shirts.
Well, this was also in the Mad Men era where if you showed up in New York City not wearing a suit, you'd probably get hosed down or set dogs on upon.
Yeah, they call that
city.
They call that a
perimeter check before you're allowed. Yes. The train was allowed to enter from Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, it was like called a non-hat hosing. Like if you did not wear a hat, anyone could hose you down.
A non-hat hosing.
Non-hat hosing. You got to wear a hat at all times when you're out in the streets of New York back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's obviously why. So there was such panic. Like, if you ever see, there's this movie with those two comedians, Oliver Hardy and Laurel and Hardy. How can I forget that?
That was very formal.
I know. I can't remember the name. The guy with the longer face and then the fat guy. Those ones. You remember those famous.
Never heard of them. What are you talking about, crazy man?
But there's a one where they somehow end up in a building under construction, you know, the kind of classic girder, walking around, climbing up ladders and stuff like that.
The kind that babies usually wander into.
They're constantly putting themselves in danger in order to rescue their hats.
Yes.
And it's just crazy. Like, they'll let go of the rope because their hat is blowing off their head or things like that. And it's, it, probably at the time people are watching that and going, well, of course you would do that. That hat costs you $15. You better save that hat. In fact, I remember when I was younger and I wanted to get a hat like Buster Keaton's, which was a pork pie hat that was very squished down, was quite flat. I remember going and looking at a hat store that was on Granville Street, and I cannot remember the name of it now, but do you remember that hat store?
Is that the one on the corner of Granville and Broadway? Because it is still there.
No, it wasn't that.
It wasn't I Love Hats.
I Love Hats.
Which is right next to I Like Hats, but just not in that way.
I like hats, but I'm fond of hats.
Yeah, I'm not in love with hats. It's mm-hmm. like right next door.
And then the one a bit farther down in the Cedar part of town is I Molest Hats.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a really weird one. The hats are all dirty. They're all kind of got fingerprints
yeah,
all over them.
I don't think I would like to go into that
it's
store.
Kind of stained and ugh, but a little sweaty.
Yeah.
But I went there and I was looking at this. I thought, well, I'll buy a hat because I really like Buster Keaton. I want to have a hat like his. And I went asked the person, I showed, had brought a picture, and I was like, what kind of hat is this? And could I get one like this? And the guy goes, well, yeah, it's a pork pie hat, and you could get a box like that. And then he told me the price, and I said, I'm going to think about it, because I'll have to take out a small loan. Now, it just seemed like such a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't like a wealthy teenager or anything. You know, I was going down there with my newspaper money. I can get a hat. Hats are what, $30? No, they're $75, $100. Nope.
I remember buying a snap brim hat in Manhattan, and it was cheap. It was about like $15 or $20 or mm-hmm. something, but it did not survive the trip home. It got a little bit too much moisture, and so there was a tiny warp in the wool and on the brim, and could not wear it. It just did not look right. And I love hats. I like a good hat, but mm-hmm. yeah, you do have to spend a lot to make a hat work.
Actually, the other thing is I have really thick hair, like such thick hair that whenever I get my hair cut, the hair cutter. What do they call themselves?
Really?
Now?
Look,
stylist?
Okay.
I don't know. Because I want to say barber.
Right, guys,
I want to say barber,
look,
but I feel like that's not what they want to call themselves.
We're recording this way too late. Here's the thing. Who's the name of that? You know, Oliver Hardy chum?
This was
what's
not
the man who cuts up hair? Who's that fellow called?
This wasn't because of that. This was I hesitated.
Be he a slicer of mains?
I hesitated because I just felt like I was heading down an insulting path to barbers, hairstylists. The hair salonists, mm-hmm. whatever. Anyway, whenever I get my hair cut, they spend most of the time saying, my, your hair is thick. I can't believe how thick your hair is. We have the thickest hair I've ever seen. Your hair
grows
so fast.
Would you mind stepping over to the sink for a second? We lost our Brillo pad. Thank you, sir. The haircut's on us.
We need to wash some dishes. Would you mind coming over here? So if I wear a hat, it just makes me really hot and uncomfortable. That was what I'm trying to get to before the whole barber hair.
Whereas I have
outrage.
Incredibly thin hair where every beautician who's ever touched it goes, wow, you have like little baby hair.
Yeah.
Like child's hair. You're like a child. Like, thank you. And so hats work really well on me. And I think for that reason.
My head is enormous.
Your head is enormous.
Well, my head, like we have to usually divide these podcasts into two parts, one for my voice and one for my head because we cannot fit both.
It is hard to edit, but that's true.
That's right. Yeah. I have always I have at least one small object in the office orbiting around my head at a time. So you put a hat on top of that, and it's just crazy bananas.
That's why we have two pillows on the bed for you on your side. I have one. You have two.
That's right.
Yes.
And they scream when I lie on them.
They're both. There's this like this,
why?
This little tiny, almost audible.
And when I make the bed when you're gone, like
that happens.
And I'm fluffing these pillows, and like there, you could hear little sounds coming from it saying, "Kill me."
She has to use an industrial steam press to fluff them up.
Right. Just the idea that you make the bed when I'm gone. We can now list the podcast under fiction.
The truth is that Pia makes the bed while Ian's in it, so she can tuck the sheet underneath his beard.
But I'm still here, dear. I'm lost again. And that's when I go into Sheet World, the magical land of sheets. I got nothing. I'm doing this too late as well. Yeah, the difference is tonight, you might notice, because normally we record our podcast about 5 hours earlier than we are right now.
Yes.
Okay, so what we've got is pumping nightclub music downstairs.
Yep.
Yeah, the little corner bistro has gone all crazy 80s.
Yep.
And cars are crazy outside.
It's bringing in the kids.
That's right. Oh, it's absolute. It's nutty. Pia and I are going to have to bring out machetes to walk home after this, just for safety.
Yeah, the hipsters will be in full
That's the only way to get through hipsters is machete.
Is with a machete?
Yep.
You can't just say, excuse me.
No.
Because they're always constantly bumping you with their pipes.
That's right. You cut their pipes, which is how they breathe.
Plus the lumberjack beards, they really tend to get tangled up when they get so many of them together.
Yeah.
It's like a rat king of hair.
I remember when I first saw a lot of beards on young men, which was I went to see Akron/Family concert. And suddenly all these guys started coming to the show and they all had full beards.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that was the first time I noticed this as wow, this is happening right around me. And I've never grown a full beard, partly because when I was younger, I couldn't. Even though I have incredibly thick hair in my head, I have no hair in my face. So if I tried to grow, I grew a goatee.
Because at that time,
early 90s.
Right. Because in the early 90s, Dave was an evil magician.
Yeah, that's right. So as part of that, I had to grow a goatee. But the problem with it was I had these little spaces where there was no hair growing.
Yep.
So it was, you know.
Because of the curse.
I don't know if it's a curse. The curse of infancy. That's what it was. The curse of immaturity.
Well, I've heard a theory about the beards.
I wasn't ripe enough.
And why folks have them now, young folks have them. Because you always want as a kid to find something that pisses off your parents.
Oh, yeah.
What pisses off your parents? Long hair? No, mm-hmm. I used to have long hair. That's all really cool. What pisses off your parents in this terrorist age? Beards. Grow up, big terrorist beard.
You know, I think what it is that this particular generation is kind of really glomming onto their grandparents' generation to piss off their parents.
Did grandpa have a huge beard?
I don't remember. My grandma didn't have a beard, so.
I don't know. It is a bit of a shock. I mean, the last time I saw this many beards on the street, I was in Manhattan and there was a lot of Hasidic Jews around, or I was in New Jersey and there was the Amish selling carrot cake at the local market.
Last time you saw that many beards?
That's the last time I saw that many beards. In between, it was a lot of clean shaven. There was a lot of mustaches because there were the 70s and the 80s and
true.
You had to deal with that. But now it's just beards everywhere.
I don't see grandpas wearing those beards, unless your grandpa was Mr. Natural.
Well, we are in the Pacific Northwest where probably everybody was, everyone's grandfather was somehow related to the fishery or lumberjack industry.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah.
And that was how you rank people in the fishery industry is by how long your beard is.
How long your beard was.
Yeah, you don't wear stripes in the military. True. It's just you're a half beardsman.
When I worked in the fishing boat, the skipper, when I met him, he had a fine handlebar mustachio. But when we started working on the fishing boat, he just let his beard grow until he had this big, enormous thing.
Yeah. Now, on that boat, was there also a millionaire and his wife?
And a movie star.
Here's my problem.
And the rest.
Okay, yeah. That's too bad. Here's my problem with that is that, so you got the Gilligan's Island theme song. This is usually what we do. We tangent off to something, and then we have to do this. Okay, so you got Gilligan, the skipper, to the millionaire and his wife, and then another millionaire, because movie stars are also millionaires.
Yeah.
So you got two millionaires, but you never have her going, you know, I got a couple of million in the bank as well, but I'm not throwing it around. You know,
I don't think she was that rich.
I don't think that. I think that.
No, because
isn't she Marilyn Monroe, basically? Isn't that the deal?
She is
Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, but every time you saw her at night when they got woken up in the middle of the night and you see Marianne running out, she's got the little nightdress, but Ginger never wore anything. She just had a blanket wrapped around her. She couldn't really afford a nice
I don't think
night.
That's why. I don't think that's the reason why. I think the reason it was ratings. But if you're a movie star, if your descriptive word is the movie star, you I think are rich back then.
Well,
I don't know. They were under contract.
She listed
under contract.
Quite a few movies. Oh, that is possible. She might have been under contract.
I just want to point out that in our culture, that the idea of being a star is kind of it's a rather tarnished star.
But back then, in the 60s, if you were a movie star, she probably had a nice. She lived. Okay, we know a couple of facts about. Let me tell you a couple. Let me tell you a couple of facts about Ginger Grant. She lived in Hollywood. Did she live in an apartment? Do you think?
Well, we don't know. She could have had a small bungalow.
Maybe a dingbat.
All right, I don't even know what that is.
It's one of those apartments that have those little stilt leggy bits over the parkades, and they have a really clever name done in a very florid font by the door, like the Cincinnati or something, or the El Coronado. You know, they were called dingbats.
And you think that's where a movie star lives?
Back then, probably.
Yeah. That's where an actress lives, not a movie star.
Maybe a bungalow.
But to people who are working on a boat going touring around Hawaii,
yes,
anyone in the movies is a movie star.
Ah, okay, I see what
you're
saying.
Here's my thing with the movie star thing. She couldn't have been that big because she was a redhead. The really big movie stars back then were all blondes.
What about Lucy?
Yeah, Astin answered.
Comedian.
What about Katharine Hepburn?
Yep, there again.
But she was
black and white. What about Lassie? biggest star in the world, Lassie.
What about Marlena Dietrich?
Exactly.
What about,
again, those are all black and white.
What about Jean Harlow?
Stars.
I'm just now naming.
What about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Think of the redheads in the 60s. They were all the ones that had those go-go dancing frill dresses, and they danced a lot, but they didn't necessarily.
The redheads did?
Yeah, you see.
I think you're stereotyping a whole group of people, and I'm offended for them. My cousins are redheads, and I don't appreciate what you're saying.
I dye my hair red all the time.
Of course they're redheads. You were an evil wizard, and you cursed them.
You know what? They're not even redheads. They're orange heads. I don't know where this whole redhead thing came. Their hair is orange. Literally orange.
Well, because when you're making a cruel nickname mm-hmm. for someone, you want a word that can easily rhyme.
Yeah, I guess that's
it. You go, red, red, wish you were dead, instead of like, orange, orange, well, don't care for you much. Doesn't
orange,
work.
Orange, you're like a door hinge.
There you are.
That's about all you got, right?
That is all you got. Yeah, that's not much of a slam.
After that, you're done.
So you have a little bit of redhead in your family.
Yes.
And you still decided to have kids. Bold choice.
Yes, I did. Bold choice indeed.
All right, fine.
Blue eyes and red hair.
Well, of course, when the
Viking
first,
blood.
Yeah, when the Gilgamesh began, it was black and white, so you didn't know she was a redhead. You had no idea. And then when it finally went to color, everyone went, oh, it's too late to change.
Oh.
But then she never appeared in the follow-ups. She didn't appear in your Harlem Globetrotter. She didn't appear on your cartoons, Gilligan's
Wasn't
Planet.
Wasn't the replacement a blonde? Kind of more of a strawberry blonde.
Yes,
yeah,
when they replaced her in the...
That's right.
Yes, that's correct.
I mean?
Interesting. She actually had... what's the word I'm looking for?
Dignity.
Dignity, yes. That's the word I'm like. Always dignity. Yeah, that's good for her. Now, personally, I always preferred Marianne because I go for the brunettes. But
she's the girl next door.
And I go for the girl next door. That's true as well.
Made a nice coconut cream pie.
That was also a good thing. There's a third quality I like, pie making. Although I make pies.
Oh, so you would be the Marianne of this podcast.
I would be the Marianne of this podcast.
Who would you be of the Gilligan's Island?
Oh, gosh. I have no idea.
Would you be like the Ginger? Would you be the Thurston? Would you be the
Just
Gilligan?
Say the professor and get it over with.
Yes, the professor. Thank you. I was trying to remember it. There's someone else forgetting.
So to establish, Dave would be the Marianne.
I'd be Marianne.
You would be the professor.
Be totally
and I
professor.
Would be the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes.
Okay.
You'd be the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yes.
Wait, I has to be the original one. You can't throw in that.
What? You can't
later
do the
non-canonical TV shows.
Oh, what do you mean it's non-canonical?
It's not canon.
Lies.
It doesn't have William Conrad in it.
That's fair. Okay, that isn't canon. Hey, you know, just when you thought the references couldn't get any older. Yeah, hey, Dave, how can we boost up our ratings? Old up the references.
That's right.
Andy Hardy references. Lucille Ball. Like last week, Jack Benny references.
Fred Allen.
That's right, Fred Allen and Senator Claghorn. Holy cow. I'm growing a grandpa beard right now just hearing these damn references. Let's talk about something modern for crying
out
loud.
Educational.
How about these MP3s the kids are listening to?
They're crazy. MP3s.
Is there an MP5? Does that exist?
There's an MP4s.
I know there's MP4s, but is there an MP5?
I don't think so.
Nope.
Well, let's invent that, and then we'll all be rich. I mean, it's obvious it's going to go to it.
Why?
Like, let's just hop, because that's where it goes.
We're still using MP3s.
I know, but that's when you've got to invent the MP5s.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Because it goes from audio, it goes to video. So MP5s, that's sense.
Smell? Smell-o-vision?
No, it's full senses, man. It's
full
every
senses.
Sense at once. It's senso-bomb. It's like you will experience it on all senses at all times.
So all it is really, you start playing music on your computer and then a bucket of water pours on your head.
And then you go, this reminds me of my childhood.
You're like, wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm feeling it all.
That's an MP5.
That's an MP5.
Yeah.
Nice. I like it.
Look, we're going to be rich.
5D.
As rich as a movie star.
He lives in a dirt bag. What was the thing called again? Sorry?
Lives in a dirt bag.
A ding bag.
She lives
with. I was close.
Yeah.
Started with the same letters.
It was really sad when they brought Gilligan's Island back and they said that Ginger had been killed by the Kennedys. I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
That was very kind of disturbing.
Yeah. That was never proven. Never proven.
Everyone knew about it.
Yeah. You're listening to Conspiracy Chat.
That's right. Welcome to our next conspiracy is...
Oh, that would probably boost our ratings.
It would, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways we could boost our ratings.
If only I knew about any of those sort of things.
Well, Marilyn Monroe slept in the nude, too. So there we go. There's your connection.
Well, she also posed in the nude.
Well, yeah.
it's not as big a deal when you sleep in the nude when you actually pose for photos in it first. It's like, yeah, that. Oh, by the way, I also sleep this way. Ooh.
Now
my,
I can imagine.
I tell you.
But now you can imagine her sleeping. Mm-hmm. That sort of makes me hot. I like look at naked women and I'm like, what would she look like sleeping?
Yeah, what if she's all bundled up?
I wonder if she wears a nightgown.
Yeah, I wonder if she has a glass of warm water next to her. Ah, I bet she likes a nice glass of water.
Pant.
I bet she's got some Kleenex over there. And yeah, a little lipstick on the pillow. That's nice.
You know what I liked about the Raiders of the Lost Ark or the whole Indiana Jones film?
Wait, what?
Is how,
what just happened?
Is how a hat
I found a dime we just turned on. What?
How hats It'll became relate. An extension of a person's character.
Oh, very good.
Okay.
Explain. Tangent off. We don't believe in tangents on this show,
Pia. This isn't a tangent. This is going back to a topic we already talked about.
The hats have their own character. They are an extension of the characters themselves.
The cats?
No, the hats.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't know the cat and the hat wasn't Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's late.
But if he was, it would go a little something like this.
It was supposed to say hat.
Okay.
Character hat.
So, all right, Indiana Jones, when he loses his hat, he's weakened. Yeah. Who else has hat issues?
There was the guy in the third movie who gets killed in the opening segment on the boat. And the way you know is that you see his hat floating by. There's a big hole in it. Then later you see the SS general who's just before he goes over the edge. I think he loses his hat, doesn't he?
Is that in the third film?
No, maybe it's Indiana Jones's hat.
Well, the third film was originally called Rats and Hats.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it was called Indiana Jones, Rats and Hats.
All the hats are wearing it.
Yeah, there's lots of hats, and we got lots of rats. And then the studio went, greenlit. People love hats. People love rats.
Man, people love Indiana Jones.
Well, you have in the second movie where he loses his hat when he gets brainwashed, then he gets his hat back when, you know, Short Round throws fire at him.
I don't believe
it. And
the
then Short
film.
Round gets his hat back.
I love the second film.
That's good. You can love it for me.
I like the adaptation. The
you can love it long time, Dr. Jones. You love it
long
time.
I love it long
time. Yeah, you go ahead.
I love the whole movie.
Do you?
I do.
Really?
I think it's crazy
like
fun.
Like the monkey brains? You like the
crazy fun, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
A dumb lady who's dumb.
She's you not like dumb. She's the comedy relief. That's not dumb.
She's a little dumb.
But so what?
Everyone vote.
Everyone
was
has to be a
dumb?
Genius in a movie?
No. You don't have to be a genius, but you have to have basic
what do you
human
that's like
dignity.
Would you say that's like the boring part of movies nowadays is everyone in the movie is like a brilliant genius who's perfect at their job and can do everything?
David, there was a little film where someone called Denise Richards played a nuclear scientist. And you know what? That was the best part of the movie, was hearing her try to say those words out loud.
Yes, but in the movie, she is not a dummy. She is a brilliant genius.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you
it
can
might
tell.
Not, it might not be believable because it's being played by Denise Richards, but in the movie, the character is a brilliant genius.
Well, I know in this podcast, I play someone who went to university and has a degree. But in
That's
reality,
right.
I have some college.
Once again, in this podcast, we are all brilliant geniuses.
Oh, great. Yeah.
We can do anything that we want.
Well, Pia's pretending to have won like Eisner Awards. I've faked that in the past as well.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we've all faked things. You faked a successful family.
Yes.
You know, we've all – none of this is true. I think like our listeners are clearly aware
that
if you like list the things we've done, they're clearly ridiculous.
And yeah.
I mean, we're in what, Hell Kitty Studios? I mean, that's clearly a ripoff of Hello Kitty. They would not legally in any way allow us to do that if they found out about it. So it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
Yes.
I think actually they only copyrighted the O.
Well, that's all they could afford back then.
Yeah.
That's how we get away with it.
Yeah. Hello Kitty started off with, this is what they started off with, a letter O and a kitten and a dream. That was all they were able to copyright because that's all they had.
That's all they were able to copyright. See, my problem with trying to defend something like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, is that what it's called?
Dumb.
Temple of Doom.
Dumb.
Have you ever seen...
worst film? Yes.
No.
But, let's go ahead. Star Wars?
I can't remember the name of it now.
No, describe it. You can't just let people hang
it. It has Cary Grant and some McLaughlin. You know what it did? It's based on Gunga Din. Does that sound right? Yeah, that sounds right. Gunga Din? The movie Gunga Din?
I thought you were saying Kyle MacLachlan for
I can't remember the actor's name, but I'm sure it's something MacLachlan. And it's like they're in Afghanistan. They're like in the British Army in Afghanistan. And it's this great adventure film. And it has the whole Kali sequence in it. And so, you know, Temple of Doom was like the sort of callback to that great adventure movie.
Right.
You know, and I don't know if you've ever seen that film. It's super fast-paced, like really fun movie to watch. And so, you know, that was a callback for that. But I was just going to say, it's hard for me to defend movies like that because I saw it once, right?
Yeah.
I saw Last Crusade. It's called Last Crusade, right?
Yes, it is.
Or Last Crusade.
No, Last.
Last Crusade. I saw it once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when you talk about like a hat floating past, I'm like, really? You know, I should see that movie again.
Take a look.
Yeah. I guess my problem with the second film was I just found it, like, I really like the first one. Like, the first one is pretty much a perfect movie to me.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Much like with Spielberg's Jaws as well. Both of them, I just go, I don't know what you'd take out or put in to make this better.
I just want to say, it's perfect in the way that all great movies are perfect is that it has something wrong with it.
The wrong thing as well?
The submarine ride.
Okay, yeah, there's a little bit of like weird.
Like when you watch that, you're like, that doesn't make any sense.
Technically, he could do it because weren't under attack. When they cruised, they cruised at sea level. He'd probably freeze to death. That's about it.
It's not technically possible.
They didn't submerge.
Yeah, stretch that rubber band for me, please.
Okay.
Wow.
But I'm just saying, I'm not condemning the film for that. Mm-hmm. Because I know that actually what explained it was cut out of the film.
Oh, what did explain it?
I don't know. I just know that there was some linking sequence that explained how he got from there to there on the submarine.
It might be in the novelization.
It could be. Let's go get Ellen Dean Foster's novelization.
Check that out. there is a scene that was cut out where he went, I can breathe underwater.
That's right. That's the scene.
I am Lord of Atlantis.
You know, the interesting thing is Raiders is probably the only film of all those films that actually got a little bit better when they did little retouches, the digital retouches, because they took out the reflection of the cobra in The Well of Souls. And I always saw that. I saw that from the first time I saw it when I was 10 years old and drive-in. That's a piece of glass there.
I never noticed that, to be honest with you.
I always noticed. People always ask me, what do you mean? Like, right there. I'm pointing at the screen and it's right there.
She's got what you call the artist's eye.
Yeah. See, I'm not that observant. I just watch the movie and
plus, when the truck gets tossed over with full of dynamite, you can see the telephone pole that shoots out from the back.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, so they erased that as well?
I don't know if they erased it.
Did they add a bunch of Gungans to the movie as well?
Only in the far, far distance.
In the far distance.
And with the workers.
Right in front of the cameras. Yeah.
And when we were watching like the first film a while back, Pia went to me, hey, did you notice that Nazi melted? And I went, no. And we look back, and he actually melts.
He does.
Totally melts.
Did you know that? That happens
in the bar?
No, it happens later near the end of the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I saw that movie as well, so I don't want to speak to that. But no, I agree with that. That film is almost perfect.
It's perfect. It is perfect. Mm-hmm. It is the base template of every action movie that came after it, that whole 10 minutes if something's got to happen, which was all modeled on serials of the 30s. So in between
Which, if you watch them, are actually really boring because every 10 minutes nothing happens.
Well, they have to like milk it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is there anyone, because I'm saying like people are, like the lady is too dumb in the second film.
I don't think that's too slow.
Let me ask this. In the first film, is anyone, with the exception of Dr. Octopus off the top, dumb? Anyone stupid?
In the first film?
Yeah. I think everyone's smart. I think everyone is like a smart person.
Everyone has their motives.
And it makes the movie move ahead, because there's no, when you have like the hero beating a dumb guy, or when the comic relief is like, because this person's stupid, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to have as much impact. Like, of course you can get the laughs off dummy dumb, you know, but, you know, I think like with Raiders, everyone's top of their game and it just makes things click along a lot better. Except again, for Dr. Octopus off the top, who should have gotten the thing off Indy later.
I think in the first movie, the only one who's really dumb are the American, the guys who hire him to go off and do it. Mm. But that's kind of just, it's more that they're just evil in the end because they're dumb. They don't get what they've got.
I think that the SS guy is kind of dumb. I think he's sort of the dumb character, picking up the medallion in the fire.
True, that is a little bit of a dumb guy thing.
Yeah. And he does a couple other dumb things in the film that are... You know, he's just sort of like, this is sort of insane, obeying orders, kind of a nut job kind of
character.
But
look at where they get the laughs from in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You get it from, like, you think he's really going to hurt.
The dead monkey?
Well, there was a little bit of like, aww. When you have that scene where it looks like it's going to be torture and like he's taking out the thing and it turns out to be the coat hanger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's great, but that's also smart. But it's also like, that all completely works. Or, you know, Indiana Jones shooting the guy with the sword. It all completely works. Everything's completely in character.
Well, I think what I remember of those films is that it was a diminishing returns. That the third to me was not as good as the second, and the second wasn't as good as the first.
I'm going to disagree. I think the third is much stronger than the second, but that's
way
me.
Way stronger.
Yeah.
I'm totally different.
It had a nice motivation in that, you know, it was like Indiana Jones dealing with like his father. And again, like I think Sean Connery became a dumb guy in that one for periods of time.
But that's okay.
He's oblivious.
That's okay.
He's in his own world.
There's supposed to be one hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not supposed to be three or four heroes. It's supposed to be Indiana Jones.
But you can have competent sidekicks. And here's the thing. The dad in that one became what Laurel and Hardy are walking through the construction site. It's mm-hmm. just like, what? You're surviving because you have to survive.
Yeah.
You're not because the movie needs you to, not because, you know, for any reason that you should character-wise. And I think that's a little bit of a flaw in a movie. It's like when you see a character in a movie, you go like, well, this guy can't possibly die because he's the good-natured comedy sidekick.
Yeah.
And like, now there's no risk for this guy at all. And that takes away the comedy. It takes away the action. It takes away everything. And
it's just cheap.
It's a little cheap.
I don't know about that.
Really? Because when you see like a Jim Belushi next to an Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know Jim Belushi ain't going to get hurt. Well, he's going to get shot in the shoulder at some point. But you know, he's just going to be the wisecracking guy. Or like, there's Kevin Pollak. He's going to be that for the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's like, yee on.
But if he died, would that make the movie better?
No, but it would actually...
If he wasn't there, would that make the movie better?
It would be interesting if you had something where you had a comedy sidekick. That guy dies, and a new comedy sidekick comes on, and you're like, oh, now there's some risk. You've just established that people aren't safe in this world.
That's called Doyle. Angel.
Angel. Well, that was, what are you going to do? Yeah, come on.
That was behind-the-scenes stuff.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He had some issues, and they had to let him go.
Oh, okay.
And those issues ended up...
is that what it was? Yeah, I knew he died of an overdose. Yeah.
Yeah, when we have a sensitive topic, this is how we run.
And your voice goes kind of high.
Listen, I'm just here. I heard that Marilyn Monroe died with...
Well, that's the thing, because we all know that Ian, you know...
Hey, that was never proven. And you know, she was... Don't say that in front of my wife.
Hey.
She's very...
Listen, sir, the court of public opinion said...
Oh, I got jury duty last week on the court of public opinion.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
do you want to know what it was like? Ask anybody.
Well, you know, I'm not a citizen, so I can't serve in the court of public opinion in Canada.
Oh, that's right.
I thought you were a dual.
Nope. Single.
You're a dual citizen.
I am a dual, yeah.
I'm a
married single person.
Yeah.
No.
She's a dual citizen, which means anyone legally can challenge her to a duel, and if she loses, she must leave the country.
Really?
That is how dual citizenship works in Canada.
Can I, as a single American, challenge you?
Yes, you can, but she would have to leave to go to America.
Okay.
Yeah, that
would suck. Specifically, I have to go, I'd love to move to America.
Would you?
Mm-hmm.
You want to live in America?
Yep.
Coming to live in America? You want to live in America?
You know, there are places I would like to live, but yeah, places I can't live because I can't afford the health insurance down there, so no.
That's the thing that, yeah. She would like to live in Guam?
That's the thing that scares me, but then when you think about it, then you're like, but lots of people live there.
Yeah.
And you almost think it's like someone living in like Kelowna or Kamloops and how they view Vancouver because they only see Vancouver on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so you almost wonder, is it really that bad there or is it just our perception of this place because all we hear about is about healthcare.
Well, what do you do for health? Like, I mean, we had a situation quite recently where it's like, oh, what's that? I don't know. Well, let's go check it out. And basically we walked 4 blocks to the emergency room, got it checked out, got the thumbs up. Everything was fine. But if we didn't have that, we would have been worrying for like weeks.
Oh, I'm sure you would. But
in the States, there would be no way of doing that.
Yeah, when I lived there in the late 90s, I had no insurance the whole time. And I was just in a constant state of worry about that.
Yeah.
It's like every time you'd be in a
tricky place.
Yeah.
And I think anyone young would be in a tricky – but I think like –
But even older, when you have like established medical conditions that you know you're not going to get coverage for, maybe – although they changed the law recently, but still it's going to be tricky and
it depends. Like I have life insurance that I got after I had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not impossible to get insurance even though you've had a life-threatening condition, right? It just depends where it is when you apply for coverage. But what I was thinking of is like say that Lisa and I moved down there, or let's pretend that we live there now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm pretending.
And she has the same job that she has, which is a teacher. So she's working.
Oh, you're pretending. Make it a different job.
Well, no, because
I got you.
What I'm saying is then we would be covered.
Let's have a realistic pretend first and then we'll have a fun pretend next.
Okay.
Go.
No, that's totally realistic because, you know, you have a job that would provide that.
Would
but
provide
we're
that.
Freelancers.
I know, that's the thing. That's the thing. But so if you're freelancing, you would have to be able to provide, you know, earn enough money to pay for insurance
and
for
yourself. I've heard friends who've had, like, had, quote, ridiculous rates down there. Like, some people pay, like, between $400 and $800 a month for one person, and it just –
That does seem
– That's excessive.
Yeah, it seems crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I don't know how that would
no,
work.
No, I mean – personally speaking, that is something that stops me. Also, my inertia, the fact that I'm such a homebody, and I couldn't stand to leave my friends and stuff like that to move to the States. Besides those things, it would be like healthcare would be like a major negative to me, to the idea of, because I would love to live in like Portland. Yeah. I would love to live down in Oregon.
Ruined by Portlandia, though.
Yes. TV series. I want to move there before it's completely ruined. But there's other places I would love, I mean, not necessarily in Portland either, just to live nearby. But I just feel like it would be more affordable for us to sell our house here and we could probably buy property down there, you know.
Maybe it's more affordable because everybody has to pay so much in health insurance.
Well, when I'm saying affordable, I don't think it would be affordable to buy around Seattle. It would be different than buying around Portland.
Yeah, that place was really affordable in the 90s. It was really cool.
And then
cool.
grunge happened, and then everyone from California moved to Seattle, and then because of that stupid show, Seattleandia. Which ruined everything in Seattle.
That is true.
Because once you have some kind of phenomenon happen somewhere, it's just an unfortunate side effect of it is that everyone thinks that is really neat, and so they want to go there to experience it.
Which is why things are so expensive in Detroit right now, because of Detroit Rock City. It's so popular, and that's why coyotes live in houses now, because only coyotes can afford it.
That's right. Yeah, they can only afford... Well,
coyotes got so rich in the aughts. Holy cow.
Well, there's a big difference between Detroit and Portland in terms of attractiveness.
Name three differences.
Three differences?
Between Detroit and Portland.
Voodoo Donuts.
Okay.
Little Big Burger.
Okay.
And Powell's Bookstore.
Okay. Those are all nonsense words. Good.
Well, you wanted the pretend
and
part of the nonsense.
And floopity-doos, doobity-bees.
Hey, you go to Portland and try to go to Voodoo Donuts. Unless you have a lot of patience, you will not go to Voodoo Donuts because all day long there is a lineup around the block. Seriously.
What makes the donuts so good?
They're voodoo.
So you take a bite in them and someone screams next to you?
That's right. Someone's arm disappears beside you. It's like blood spurting out. Eating the donut. You're like, but it's so good, Top. Their leg disappears. They're like laying on the ground, writhing in pain.
I think you've just written an EC comic. To the time machine.
That's right.
Let's get Bill Gaines on this.
Hello.
Could I say something?
Elf Feldstein.
Speaking of health, we were in like this emergency room and on the TV, someone changed the channel at one point and put on House.
No.
Yes. It's like, that shouldn't be allowed by any means in an emergency.
Was that really adorable little girl in there while that was going on?
No, she wasn't.
Oh, no. She was so cute.
Yeah, it was just a little girl that came in with an adorable problem, which I can't tell you because of doctor-patient confidentiality. I think because we were listening to a doctor talk to her, I think we're still covered by that. But it was the most adorable, you know, it was literally like, I've got a problem. I was like, oh, no, I hope it's not something terrible. And there was this little thing that was just like, oh, that's so adorable.
It's this adorable cocaine addiction.
Yeah. Oh. I love the snow so much. I make angels in my head.
She had a little tummy ache, and it was just so cute.
Hun, doctor-patient confidentiality.
I know, but it was still adorable.
Doctor-patient spectator confidentiality.
That's right. Have you ever read the story Dr. Jekyll?
Doctor-patient eavesdropper confidentiality.
If you ever read the story Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, that's why you could never confess to any of the crimes because of doctor-patient confidentiality.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, here's my
question. Doctor alter ego confidentiality.
Here's my problem with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
What is your problem?
Okay.
Tell us.
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So you turn into Mr. Hyde. Mm-hmm. You lose your doctorate? You are still a doctor, sir. Why can't you be a doctor?
I don't think Mr. Hyde is a practicing doctor.
Yeah.
So you just go with Mr.?
Yeah.
But you could still be called Doctor.
Because he's Mr. Hyde, PhD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it becomes a philosophical thing because he doesn't have the dexterity in his fingers when they get that big.
Oh, so, that's a good point. Okay.
He'd be dangerous with a scalpel.
Do you know that Robert Louis Stevenson, or as I like to call him, RLS, tried to burn that manuscript and his wife rescued it from the fire?
Wow. Yeah. Well, because he just like burning stuff?
He was just horrified by the story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can understand that.
He wrote it and he was just like, what the hell have I written? This is ghastly. And he just threw it in the fireplace and his wife said,
whereas,
no, this is a bestseller. No,
here's the flip side on that. When Stephen King wrote Pet Sematary, because he just needed to get a bunch of really ugly crap out of his soul and onto paper, his wife looked at it and said, you can never publish this. And he said, okay, put it in a drawer.
The original title was called Pussy Gagore.
She said, you can never publish this because one day David Dedrick will read the story in grade 12 and will stop reading your novels forever after. And that's exactly what happened. Although, no, I did read It after that.
I think what
did you read?
It.
What did you read?
I read It.
Why don't you just tell me what you read?
I read It.
What's the problem? Just tell me what you read.
I'm telling you.
You're wasting our time.
I'm not wasting your time. I read It.
I think Misery was probably the...
Are you shining me on?
Listen, this was like just when you told me about when you went to see The Thing.
Man, this podcast is like a dead zone. Can't believe it.
That was the first book I read of his. I love that book.
The first book was Dead Zone?
Yeah.
I love Dead Zone too. The first book I read was...
Sorry for taking a stand on that, guys.
The first one I read was The Stand. Which is pretty much the kind of like...
I never read The Stand because everybody who I ever knew who read The Stand said that they caught a cold while reading it. It's like, I can't afford to catch a cold.
I did not catch a cold while reading it.
Okay, everyone.
Oh, you're the first one.
Everyone who's read that book, stay in one place. Honey, you stand by me.
The
That's not it. The body.
That's it.
All right. Okay, technical.
I'm just going to have to take a long walk after that one.
Oh, very good.
I don't know that one.
How long can we go with this, everybody?
Those are the Richard Bachman stories.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
You know what? I think this bit's getting thinner and thinner every time.
That's too Richard Bachman now. I have to get running.
Maximum Overdrive.
I have to get running, man. The one book I read by him, which was Night Shift.
Yes.
I think that's the name of the book.
I read that one, yeah.
It's a collection of short stories. The only collections of short stories I ever read were in school, so it never occurred to me that someone would publish a collection of short stories. So I started reading that book. I read the first one, which was Jerusalem's Lot, which is a sort of kind of H.P. Lovecraftian story. Read that. It was like, that's a great opening chapter. Turned the page, started reading this story about this astronaut who has aliens growing in his hands. I'm like, this is going in a weird place, but are they related? I was kind of flipping back, like, I don't understand this. Got to the third story, which I'm sorry, I cannot remember the third story now, but started reading that. I'm like, what the bleep is going on in this book? I don't understand. Like, and I wasn't, it took me like maybe another couple stories before it finally dawned on me that I was reading a short story collection.
I could not connect. I had the same problem with After the Quake by Haruki Murakami. Is that what his
name is? Yes, it is.
I thought it was one long narrative,
totally,
and
right.
It just kept like, okay, these are going to be disparate threads and they're going to connect at the end, right?
Yeah.
No, they're all just short stories, and then suddenly there's a talking frog. And it was a good book, though.
Yeah, it was just weird, like, because I could
Someone's
not make head or tail.
You have to have it on the cover. These are short stories.
Hey, dummy.
Well, didn't they? I guess they didn't have their own titles.
I was in grade 8. Come on, I was in grade 8, so, you know.
So they had their own titles, but you thought they were chapter
names. Yeah.
All right.
I was like, Jerusalem's Lot. Okay. Because all I'd read by him up to that point were these long, like, you know, I read The Stand, I read The Shining. I guess I read Carrie, and I think I tackled that one, and
I remember reading Misery while I was babysitting. I went through the whole book, like, in one night. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I have to keep going. Oh, my God, his legs. Yeah, it was...
Because was Misery post Pet Sematary?
Yes.
Because basically there was Cujo, sucked.
Yeah,
Christine,
I don't know if I read
sucked.
Cujo.
Pet Sematary, sucked. And I just said, you know what? I'm done. I'm obviously too old for these books and I've outgrown them. Just like Robert Ludlum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you read them, you're like, these are the greatest books ever written. I love these action books. They're so fantastic. Then about the sixth one, you're like, man, these books are all the same. This is shit. Throw away.
Into the fireplace, Robert Louis Stevenson's wife pulls him out. Would you boys stop throwing perfectly good books into the fire?
Like the first one you read, like the first Ludlum book, let's say, or any kind of sort of potboiler or, you know, kind of that sort of trashy novel, and putting that in quotes because I don't really think they're trash.
The Shining was good. I remember that.
Agreed.
And I always liked it because the big climax happened on December 2nd, which was my birthday.
Ah.
Like, yay! Axes!
Yeah, like the first Ludlum I read was a Holcroft Covenant. And I was so fascinated by it. I had gone fishing with my grandma and grandpa. And instead of participating in the family activities, I just spent all my time reading the stupid book. And on the way down, my grandfather got so mad at me because I wasn't looking at nature. I was reading. I was laying in the back of the motorhome reading the whole time going down because this book was so, addictive. And I didn't actually start reading it till near the end of our trip. And so I started reading this book. I was just like, I cannot stop reading this book. So
I see where your daughter gets it from.
I have one. I said to him, "I have one word for nature: redundant." So, which I stole from Robertson Davies from the Samuel Marchbanks, the Diary of Samuel Marchbanks.
I said something similar to that when I was like touring northern BC, and every day was gorgeous.
Yeah,
and then I just got so sick of gorgeous. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, it's another
trees.
Gift from God.
Trees.
Couldn't be more beautiful.
Trees,
look
mountains.
At that; it's jaw dropping. I want to go home. I want to just read. I want to like be a social outcast. It's like, yeah, no, I want to be hobo, a city hobo.
Where you weren't a social outcast?
Not hobo,
when you're on
city
the road.
Hermit.
You weren't a social outcast on the road.
I was. You can't be because
it's
you have to share
a
van.
Thing.
You know,
oh, okay.
All these people, and
okay.
it was a hippie trip. It was like it's like I'm not a drug user or a drinker really. And we went on a tour teaching kids not to use drugs or drink. I've never used drugs or drank more in my life because I was so bored, you know, on this tour. All the kids, you know, afterwards you'd have to talk to the kids and, you know, you hear their stories and just go, yeah, maybe you should drink. No, you wouldn't say that. But yeah, you could go 100% understand it.
You could understand, yeah. You're in horrible places where that's all you have to do.
Yeah, basically, like, you know, so many of the girls were like knocked up and so many of the guys were just like jerks. And it was just like, yeah, you know what? You can leave. There will become a time where you can leave.
That doesn't seem, that's not an option when you're a teenager, though. And that's the hardest time for them. I remember going on a band exchange trip with Hazleton, BC, which was a 19-hour.
Shout out to Hazleton out there.
Hazleton, woo! Represent. New Hazleton, woo! They're across the bridge from each other.
Go buckwheats.
Buckwheats? I don't think buckwheats. Anyway, probably the totems or something like that, you know, in the interior. But it was a 19-hour bus ride from here to there. And, of course, I stayed up the whole bus ride there because, you know, you're young and you're like, this is the most exciting thing ever. We're going on a bus ride to Hazleton to play in a band concert. Woo! Come on, let's go! And then so you're just up the whole time, you know, and later on looking at a map, it's not even a third up the province, Hazleton. Mm-hmm. It's 19 hours and you're not, you don't even make a third of the trip. But so I got there. So I was like, you know, sleep deprived. My eyes were like as big as saucers. And I got there and the person I was supposed to bill it with who I knew because they'd already come down and stayed with us. So I went up there. His brother picked us up because, this other guy was working. He had a job at a restaurant called Crispy Critters. I can't think of a more appetizing name for a restaurant than that, right? So his brother picks us up in his 69 Nova, this dark...
You know what would be less appealing? Soggy Critters.
Yes, that's true, actually. Yeah, Undercooked Critters. That restaurant did not go well. So his brother picks us up in this the 69 Nova, and so there's two of us being billeted in this place.
69. Here we go.
Woo, yeah. Ladies. And so the smarter guys called Shotgun. So I got to sit in the back. So this was a 60s muscle car, which are essentially made for two people and three amputees to sit in the back seats. So
aren't those also the cars that pretty much the exhaust pipe connects right into the back seat? That's all you get is fumes in the back seat of a Nova.
Maybe. I don't know. I hope not, because that would explain a lot, though. So I'm in the back, and the whole back of it is just covered with beer bottles. So every time he turns a corner, I'm like peppered by all these beer bottles that are rolling around in the back. And then he's driving us out of town. And they lived about, I don't know, they lived like about a 20-minute drive outside of Hazleton. And it was the most terrifying journey of my life because he would cut every corner in the oncoming lane around blind corners. You could not see what was coming. Like, I guess they just assumed, well, we live up here. No one's coming around the corner. What? Are you sure? Like, are you willing to bet your life? Apparently you are. Well, where are the seatbelts in this?
He was just trying to get Dave to stop reading his book and enjoy nature.
I was gathering all the beer bottles around myself as a protective shell in case the car came around the corner.
Yep. Cover yourself with glass. That's what they say in a car accident.
Then we went to their house, and I was horrified to discover that they had two channels, and for some reason, both were playing Happy Days. And I don't know why. And then in their backyard, they had this like rocky place that they lived. It's basically like they lived like their house was like over a ravine. And in the back of the property, they had all these smashed up cars that they used for demolition derby. This is what the boys did for their spare time. So we had dinner, spaghetti. This is to show you how my memory still works. Then it was decided we should go back into town because everyone, like all the band people were all gathering places. So let's go back into town. Let's go to the movies. So we drive back into town, get into Hazleton to the one theater in town, which was playing this Canadian thriller called The Amateur. Do you remember this movie?
No, I did not.
Me neither. Me neither. So
so they couldn't get the movie The Professional.
That's right. That's because, you know, that would be American.
Yeah.
So
the Canadian knockoff, The Amateur.
It just
struck
me as amusing that, you know, here you are. You have one theater in town and this is what it's playing? Like this kind of second run blah movie?
I remember living in a really tiny town, Sutton, Ontario, in the mid-80s, and they had like Tootsie. All summer.
Okay, yes.
So that's what you were stuck with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this would be the same
Nelson,
thing, right?
BC ran Benji the Hunted for a very long period of time.
So we paid to get in. We sat down in this movie, which is really boring. And of course, I was totally exhausted. I still hadn't slept since the day before, right? So we were watching the movie and I fell asleep. But then I woke up with this scream in my dream. There was like this, wah! And I suddenly opened my eyes up and I was like, did I just scream out loud? And I'm looking around this theater, like if people are looking at me like, why did that guy just scream? So this is a really nervous moment. And then the one guy turns and he goes, let's get out of here. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, did I scream? Is that why you want to leave? Like I could never bring myself to ask anyone though. So then we went out and then it was decided, hey, let's cruise around and see what we can find. Like, I don't know, a party of moose or something. I have no idea what we're looking for. So we drove around and around and around in this car, cutting corners at night. And then finally they said, well, let's go to the drive-in. So I'm like, okay, we'll go to the drive-in. Only let's not pay for it. Let's not, you know, we don't want to all pay. So two of you get in the trunk and two of us will sit and we'll just have to pay, right? So here's a lesson I learned, which is never get in the trunk with the driver's brother. This is a little lesson. So we get in there. It's pretty roomy, right? It's an old car. We get in. He laughs at me. He's like, have fun, slams the lid, gets in the car, and then peels off. So all this gravel, you know, hits the trunk and stuff like that. And he zooms off down the road. And immediately we're panicking. We're like, we're dying. We're pounding on the trunk of the car. We're just yelling and screaming. And then he opens the lid and we're in the drive-in. I'm like, didn't someone notice? How many are you? Two of us. Meanwhile, in the back of the car, we're dying. Help us. We are running out of oxygen. Pound, pound. Yeah, just two of us. I'll just pay for two. So then
he's doing perfect lip sync of what you're saying at that time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He's like, wow.
I'll have two. Yeah. So, then
Dave just lip sync.
I just lip sync. Yeah. Sorry. It's not very good podcast etiquette. Sorry. I was doing miming. And so then we parked. And you know what movies were playing? It was two movies, a double feature.
Mm-hmm.
This was for the kids. Drive-in movie, ready? 9 to 5. and the Four Seasons.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was all numbers. It was the all numbers
That's
movies.
Right.
I remember when that movie came out. We were visiting in New Jersey at the time in another small town. And, yeah, they had that movie on and I think another – like really cool kids movie, but it was full.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with my grand aunts and they were like, let's go see Four Seasons. I'm like, oh, I'm 8 years old.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this to us?
Yeah.
We were somewhere, I don't know, somewhere up north and we had a billet and it was a creepy billeting house.
Yeah.
And it was a house that had a doll collector. And what I did was my friend at the time was terrified of these dolls and she had to sleep in the doll room with like, literally like about 100 dolls, like old timey dolls.
Oh, wow.
And so one thing I did like at night was I went in and I turned all the dolls' heads so they were all looking at her and she woke up screaming and I had to do the old, what are you talking about? That is weird. No, seriously, I would not do that. What the? Anyway, but we decided we gotta go do something. One of the guys in the troop, I had broken the guy's satellite dish trying to fix it. We're going to the movies because we've destroyed your TV. So we went to the movies and we had never seen this type of movie before, but it was something like, you know, The Journey. I'm like, all right, let's see what The Journey's about. It's about a guy like punching the sky. All right, here we go. So we're just doing that and it's a football player and he's, you know, going through some stuff. And then someone comes up and just says to him at one point, you know what you need? Jesus. He goes, no, I don't. And he goes on a journey, and it's just like, oh, I'd never seen this kind of Christian movie before. It's weird when you don't expect it, and you're like, maybe this is just an aspect of the film. Nope, this is the whole film. It was like when if you were reading those Archie Christian comics, as I was, and not knowing the angle, and you're just like, oh, I want to go to the prom, but Archie won't tell him, but Jughead won't take me, says Big Ethel.
Yeah.
I feel sad. Maybe I should kill myself. No, says Betty. Think about Jesus. What just happened?
Yeah,
now
I know.
They're dancing.
I know.
What's going on?
It was disturbing, right? Because you didn't know that's what they were. They were just in a pile of Archie comics that you would get somewhere, and you'd be reading through them, and you'd come to this one, and you'd be like, suddenly I feel a little creepy. Like, what? What the hell? What is this?
Yeah. It's like, don't you guys – I noticed Sabrina's not in this. Okay. Sure. What's going on with this? Yeah. Right. I don't know how many of those comics –
Yeah, Sabrina's not in this. And either is S&M Fred. He didn't –
What?
He's not in it either.
What era was he in?
Maybe that was the 80s. I may be thinking of a different
time. That was Archie's Gags and Spanks.
That was the Studio 54 digest.
Archie's Gag Balls and Spanks.
Gag Balls and Spanks. That little Jinx, she's a little minx. Little Jinx is older now, everybody. Do you know that?
Well,
little Jinx is a grown teen girl now.
We all enjoyed the Gimp House Gang.
this podcast took a turn.
It's Josie and the Pussy.
Cats?
What? No, I don't think so.
I was after the comma.
Oh, all right. Boy, this is a terrible tangent, but the lady who was Josie passed away today.
Oh.
Who was Josie?
It was Dan Carlo's wife. Josie. I hate that I'm leading into that with that, but that was kind of a sad thing. But
we were having so much fun, you brought it down.
I want to bring that up because we mentioned her on another of the shows. And now it gives me an excuse to maybe put something up, you know, a little bit of something about her.
But yeah, that'd be nice.
It was nice to meet her once upon a time, and she was very sweet. Okay, back to Archie. What the?
We can't go back now. You ruined
it. We can't go back. No. I mean, this is weird. It used to be like Archie Christian Comics. Now he's teaming up with KISS. Knights in Satan's Service.
Knights in Satan's. That's not what it stood for. But anyway.
Really? KISS did not? Because that's what we heard. Knights in Satan's Service.
Yeah, well, of course, there was stuff like that. Or remember that they had their own blood was in their first issue of their comic?
Yes.
As part of the ink?
That's right.
We heard that. Or that Gene Simmons had a cow tongue grafted to his own tongue to make it longer? That was one of the rumors that...
Did you want to tell that story?
Yeah, for the longest time growing up, I had thought that my dad actually auditioned for KISS.
He did?
I thought.
Oh, you thought he did.
Well, I'm still not sure, though.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember, like, in the 70s when I was reading comics and I saw those ads for those posters, and there was a KISS poster in there, and I'm like, that looks really familiar to me, and like that these big boots.
Yeah.
And I remember going up to my dad and like, I remember a guy coming to the house, like when I was about four or five, and he had these boots on, these silver lamé platform boots, mesh tank top, you know, kind of metal guy with long hair. And I was on the sidewalk in front of our house, drawing on the sidewalk in crayon. I was a very, very not getting it kind of kid at the time.
Well, you wanted a permanent record.
Yeah, I did this all the time. I was very destructive as a child. So I was doing this, and I remember looking up and seeing this guy standing there, and he's looking down, smiling at me. And he was just like really terribly amused at me doing this obviously destructive thing on the sidewalk. And I'm just telling my dad about this. He's like, you remember that guy? He's like, oh, yeah, that was when I was auditioning for KISS as their next drummer. And, like, it was about 73 or 74 or somewhere around there.
Okay. Can I tangent forward a little bit? So we're at Comic-Con.
But I was going to continue.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, don't interrupt Ian.
Okay.
Let our guest speak.
Well, this is the thing.
I shushed Dave a couple of times, apparently, in the last comment, the last podcast, and so I'm getting
mine now. Okay, here we go.
But Pia,
all right, okay.
Dave, please, let our listeners have a conversation
with you. Please be quiet and let Ian interrupt?
Okay, go ahead. All right, so.
So the story continues that two of the members of KISS, after this audition, came to the house, and they had dinner, and they were talking about having my dad play with KISS.
Yeah.
And my dad, when he found out about the costume thing, kind of didn't want, but he wasn't sure. But apparently, during this dinner, I spoke up and said, "Daddy's gonna wear mommy's nylons."
Really?
And that kind of sealed the deal for him. He's just like, "No, I can't do this. Sorry, it's just not for me." So that was, I always was, for years, had this idea that I destroyed my father's career with KISS, thinking about this. And then years later at Comic-Con, I saw Gene Simmons, and I went up to him, and I told him the story.
Could I just say the story? I forced you to talk to Gene
Simmons. Yes,
I was like, Gene Simmons is here. Go talk to him and ask him that. I can't. He's with two ladies. I can't go. I can't. He's got those two ladies. I'm like, go. You've got to ask him. So I forced the issue, and you went up to Mr. Simmons.
I went up to him, and I told him the story, and he's like, I've never been to New Jersey. I'm like, okay.
What? No, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, because he said, because I told him about this audition he took. He went to one in a warehouse in New Jersey. He's like, never auditioned there. I never would have auditioned a guy named Roy. And like, that didn't happen. I'm like, okay, well, maybe it wasn't you, but maybe it was the two other guys. And it's like, okay, well, what's your dad's number? Let me call him right now. And I'm like, oh, my God, I wish I had my father's number.
It was one of those just like where you could call him on something. It's like Gene Simmons will call.
It was the perfect moment. I didn't have my father's number because we're long since estranged.
Yeah.
But it would have been so perfect.
Yeah.
And it's like, Dad, here's Gene Simmons.
I've got Gene Simmons in line. Can you talk to him about your audition?
Yeah, I haven't talked to you for a couple of years, Dad. Anyway, I got Gene Simmons here to call you out on some bullshit. Here we go.
Well, he could say, well, it wasn't KISS, actually. It was the band they were in before KISS, which I can't remember the name of, but they had a different name. No, it wasn't Hug.
Fondle.
It was some kind of name like Da-da-da-da Brown or whatever, like some kind of like, you know, I can't remember.
Well, I know my dad apparently was a studio musician for many years in New York around there, and he did a lot of stuff. He was a pretty professional drummer for a long time there.
Okay.
But he had this habit of whenever, you know, he got offered something really good, he'd say, no, I got a family. I was like, you know, maybe your family would like you to get this.
So then he could, but he could then blame his family for holding him back. That's a thing.
I know. It was really odd. Mm-hmm. I remember when we were living in Finland, he was with a what he called was a punk band, but then I found out it was actually a prog rock band, and they were kind of crazy. And
that's the saddest time in a little girl's life when you realize your father's in a prog rock band.
Yeah, that's right. You thought it was a punk rock
for
band.
For years, you thought it was punk and cool and subversive.
Turns out he's playing a lot of triplets and
lot of
things like that. On his
They cover that in this booklet, patterns. Daddy, Why Are We Prog Rock?
That's right. Are you there, Prog? It's me, Margaret.
Saddest thing, but I've always liked Gene Simmons. Like, I mean, it's hard to like all things about Gene Simmons, but I always liked Gene Simmons just because he was like really nice about the thing. I was like, that's what you want.
Yeah.
You want that moment where they're going to grab the phone and call your person.
That's
and
amazing.
Just like tell you,
he does seem like I don't agree with everything he says, obviously, but
or you'd be a madman.
Well, this was before the reality TV show when he seemed a little more level, but. You know, like,
do you think he's less level with it? I don't know. It's hard to tell. Those shows play up so much stuff. It's so corny.
Those shows tend to direct the crazy out of you.
His kids seem great. And I mean, to me, that's a sign of a good family is if your kids seem
nice.
Level-headed.
Yeah.
And,
like, you can have a wild lifestyle. Like, I've known a couple of people who've raised kids in, like, what you'd call crazy. But the parents were there for them.
Yeah.
And they have that stability. Mm-hmm. There is like, one of my favorite interviews I ever saw on The Daily Show was Jon Stewart and Gene Simmons. And Gene Simmons was talking about how he never wanted to, like, be monogamous.
Yeah.
He was like, why would you want to deny yourself all the pleasure of, like, all these women and all this pleasure? And Jon went, well, I guess it's the difference between pleasure and joy. And went, that's completely
great.
It.
Oh, no, that's so great. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's like joy is such a deeper thing, and you can't have that when you have everything on the buffet.
Actually, what happened was Gene Simmons said, I just can't see myself as being, you know, like in monogamy. He's like, why? Well, it's like wood, isn't it? Like, I'm not wood. I say, no, you're thinking of mahogany. He's like, what?
All this time I've had wood for nothing? It would be great to see Gene Simmons in Canada lick a metal pole in the wintertime. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
He would tear off his cow's tongue if he did that, though. That's the problem.
Was that a thing? Did he attach a pole?
No, of course not. Ridiculous.
Look, I'm just...
He was here in Canada, though, because he filmed that movie in
Runaway.
Right in Delta. Yeah,
Runaway.
Right in Delta,
that's right.
In Sunshine Hills.
Yeah, he...
Everyone was all excited because Gene Simmons was... Mm-hmm. He's in the neighborhood.
Well, everyone was all excited because they were doing a movie in Vancouver, which was like, what?
Yeah, that time it was like,
Tom Selleck is in town?
Yeah.
What?
Now it's like,
yeah, remember when Rambo used to like hang out here?
I just want to go back a little bit.
My old drama teacher was in that movie, Rambo First Blood. Yep.
Did he get shot?
He was one of the first three hunters who start the whole fracas at the beginning.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah.
He could go to RamboCon.
And then later he was in Stakeout, and he was the doctor who got beat up during the escape. So, yeah.
I don't remember that movie.
I used to live across from the house from Stakeout, too. But back to
Dave. That's right, yeah. Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes, that's true.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It's the same house from Stakeout 2 where the ape first goes, I've had enough of this bullshit.
I lived across from that street, too.
I did, too. I used to live with you.
We were side by side.
Yeah.
No. Two different buildings, but we were neighbors.
Okay, both things are true, Dave.
Yes.
You might be thinking one must be a lie, but this is not true. Don't get Gene Simmons to call me out on this. Because that's every time we have an argument, Pia always calls. Gene Simmons calls and goes like, you're full of shit, buddy. I just looked on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But anyway, go, Dave, you tell me your thing. And then, we got to start wrapping up soon.
Oh,
we're not made of bandwidth.
Oh, yeah,
well, we could just make this into two parts.
No, we can't. Shut up. Okay, go.
I write.
It's okay for me to say shut up because she's my wife.
Two parts.
Yeah.
No, well, that doesn't work.
It gets me hot.
Well, now I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up what I was thinking about was.
Let's turn this podcast into a three-way.
Oh, no.
I mean, three episodes. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to bring.
Yes, you will.
Because now it seems like a better topic. Well, I was thinking about when you were talking about the journey.
Yes.
It made me think about, remember when those films would come to town, like, In Search of Noah's Ark? You know, when they would come on those sort of limited runs, and they would play, like, at the Clova or some kind of
outlet. Yeah, they're going to tell the truth.
Or the What the Bleep do they Know? Or?
Oh, that came a little later.
That's a lot later than that.
Because it's a limited release, and it's just one of those movies where you go, what? What is it about?
I didn't know what the Bleep It was about, so I didn't see that movie.
Can I tell you something about
that? Sort of quantum physics with sort of a new agey sort of
thing? Let me tell you, I do like talking about this one thing from that movie that just made me go, shut up. Just shut up, movie, shut up. It just made me mad. Because they also showed this on the Oprah show. And what they had was they had two jars of water, and to prove the effect that your mind had on things around you, they wrote the word love on one, and they wrote the word hate on the other, and then the next day they came in and they measured the water and they said, oh, the one that says love is more positively charged and the one that says hate is more negatively charged. You know, so this shows that our thoughts, you know, have an effect actually on inanimate objects. And what I thought was, no, what it proves is water can read. Water can read. Also, water can read English. Because, you know, if you had some Chinese water, it couldn't read the North American writing. Also, water can read backwards because it's reading it backwards. Wow. If the love water actually could read properly, it would be reading hate, which is written on the jar across from it, because that's what it could see. So it might be completely reversed. But anyway, that lost me 100%.
How did they judge it to be negatively or positively charged?
Oh, like, because here's how, Dave. They put because it's all bullshit.
Well, yeah. Because it's bullshit. I'm just wondering what they use as a,
it's
as
like
a measuring
a bull,
device.
Really clarify
it's like
that.
A bull with bullshit at one end, and on the other end, it's got bullshit, and it's bullshit all the way through.
Is that right?
And that's how they do it. It's just a bullshit bull made of
I'm
shit.
I'm thinking that it's bullshit, but what I was
but
curious about
the through line
how
is
how
that
they...
Mary Matlin's character has a spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. So that's...
She has to discover... Yeah.
She has to discover why the principal from Buffy the Vampire Slayer is bothering her in her like floaty dream sequences.
Yes, but she becomes spiritually connected to the universe around her by the end, and she feels a oneness and a wholeness and a
well. It's one of these where it's like it's where they roll
nice
their
use
eyes.
Of the, radio voice.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm working.
Oh,
on
Oh, we all
that.
Doing radio voice
let's
now.
Let's do radio
yeah,
voice.
It's one of these. It's one of these. It's one of these movies where they roll their eyes and go, isn't it crazy how people don't believe this simple thing?
Oh,
because
yeah.
It's a lie. That's why they don't believe it. Why don't believe people believe that babies are ice cream? Because they're not. It's a simple thing to believe. It
I
is.
I wish
that's
babies
why
were ice cream.
Oh, would be.
Now, did I interrupt this tangent about the movie that you
no,
were talking
No, because now I'm thinking about ice cream.
No.
That's the problem with being on this non-sweets thing. As soon as people bring up sweets, I'm immediately like,
can you get
cream.
Unsweetened ice cream?
Cake. Nah, I just feel like it would be cheating.
Yeah. Hey, guys, why don't you and I go out for ice cream and let Dave watch us eat ice cream?
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think that sounds awkward, and that's what we like to end on.
Yeah,
our
like
awkward,
an awkward moment for Dave.
Sweet little awkward moments.
Ice cream.
All right, Dave, wrap
he
it up, buddy.
He is enjoying the.
Let's all wrap this up nice and softly. I'm gonna do what I normally do, which is plug my shows.
Yeah, time to pimp.
Every third Thursday of the month, if you're in Vancouver, I'm at the Cosmic Zoo doing a show called Titmouse, which is sketch improv.
We were there tonight. It was really good.
Thank you very much. And Pia helped with the props on that. We also do a show called, you did the poster as well. Actually, hey, that's a good point.
That's a good point. Bring that up, yes.
If you want to see the posters for our Titmouse show, which Pia Guerra, artist supreme, does. I say that because she used to be in the band The Supremes before they
That's
went
right.
in a different direction.
That's right.
They are on the SneakyDragon.com webpage.
Stop singing about clothes. Baby glove. My baby glove. Okay, go
ahead. Well,
wow.
It was a baby.
Wow. That is the worst thing we have ever done on this show. And we've talked about Clifford Olson. If you want to see me do stand-up or host a stand-up show, it's called Amuse-Bouche. That's at Slickety Jim's here in Vancouver. And also, why not check out the Irrelevant Show on CBC Radio, available on
why
podcast.
Not?
I write for that show. Anything you want to plug, sweetie?
I haven't done anything in a while.
Except the posters.
Except the posters.
Okay, so look at the posters.
All right. And
Pia has plenty of irons in the fire.
And if a book comes out with your name on it, purchase it then.
Yes.
Okay, because people will listen to this in the future. Podcasts stay
forever
on the internet, so don't worry about it. Like, you know, plug your future projects that you haven't made up yet.
But I don't. Okay, yes, you're right. All right, yeah. If something comes out with my name on it and possibly other people's names on it and. Maybe even a certain someone you've talked to before will be editing it.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
And Pia is also working on Wolverine Marries Superman, which is way in the future.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even be saying that, but Wolverine is going to marry Superman.
This is the big crossover for 2014?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think the adamantium could cut Superman's game?
It cuts his heart. and lets him feel love.
Oh, there you go.
That is something else.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be touring through the southern United States and through some rural parts of Canada, my new film, In Search of the Tower of Babel. I will be doing that as a speaking tour, and I have a movie showing me searching for the Tower of Babel.
The funny thing is he ends the film speaking a different language than he begins with.
He babbles on.
Yeah, he babbles on.
As usual.
Actually, if you do come down to Emerald City Comic Con, both Dave and I will be hanging around there.
I'll be there too.
So will Pia Guerra. So if you actually want to come and say hi, we will be there, and we'll tell you more places that we'll be in the future. But come on down to Emerald City Comic Con. It's fun.
Yes.
Or up. I don't know where you live. Go up. Go sideways. Go east. Go west. I don't know where you live.
He's not judging you. All right, everyone. Well, on that note of non-judgment, goodbye.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Sneaky Dragon, which we don't really appreciate. This was a personal thing between David Dedrick and myself, Ian Boothby. But if this is the kind of thing that interests you, well, that's fine. You can listen to past episodes on iTunes or go to our website, www.sneakydragon.com. I know I don't have to say www. I know you know how the web works. I'm not trying to be condescending. But you know what? Sometimes mums and grandmums listen to this show. I'm trying to be nice to them.
We're great.
That was fun.